Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Mantaraj, Srimad Bhagavatama ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Joya Nitai Gopurimanandi. So tonight we'll begin chapter 9. As we announced last night, then next Monday we'll do a revision of the 8 chapters, from chapters 1 to 8. And then on the 12th, which will be 2 Mondays from now, we'll do the closed book exam. Is that on the website or something? Send an email or something? And then the open book exams are due on the May the 12th, along with the oral book presentations, the oral presentations also. Please have everything ready. Okay, so tonight we'll begin chapter 9, verses 1 to 13. Next week we'll do, Monday will be a revision, and then the following Monday will be the exam. So we'll just begin chapter 9 now. So we're hearing about the churning of the ocean of milk, and the appearance of... We heard about the appearance of Lakshmi, now we're hearing about the appearance of Mohini Murti. Now she's going to appear. There's a many incarnations of the Lord appearing in Canto 8 of the Bhagavatam. Okay. So, Shukadev Goswami said, thereafter the demons became inimical toward one another, throwing and snatching the container of nectar. They gave up their friendly relationship. Meanwhile, they saw a very beautiful young woman coming forward toward them. So we read last night that the nature of the demons, there's one verse that describes the nature of the demons at the end of chapter 8, that they are always self-interested. Now in Kali Yuga, it says that the demons and the devotees are in the same body. So we have both natures. We have the demoniac nature and the devotional nature. So depending on how we feel or which side of the bed we get up on or what state of consciousness we find ourselves in, our consciousness tends to fluctuate, which means sometimes we have demoniac thoughts, sometimes we have devotional thoughts. So we change. So the devotee must become more prominent as time goes by. We must become more devotional. And our demoniac nature, or our rebelliousness towards Krishna, or the desire to be separate from Krishna, has to decrease. That is the demoniac nature. So, what is the nature of the demon? As we heard last night, he wants everything for himself. So the demons are all family members, but even the family members fight. Especially in Kali Yuga, the family members are fighting. Because basically the nature of demoniac consciousness in Kali Yuga is everyone wants everything for themselves, so they will fight. Because they want to keep what they perceive as good for themselves. So this is materialistic consciousness. So you see the demons, even though they're all brothers and cousins, but they're all in this state of fighting and competing continuously. Upon seeing the beautiful woman, the demon said, alas, how wonderful is her beauty, how wonderful the luster of her body, and how wonderful the beauty of her youthful age. Speaking in this way, they quickly approached her, full of lusty desires to enjoy her, and began to inquire from her in many ways. So that once again, we'll discuss this tonight, we'll hear about this tonight. The demoniac nature is that they want to enjoy the opposite sex. As soon as a demon or one who has demoniac spirit sees the opposite sex, he wants to enjoy. The man wants to enjoy the woman and the woman wants to enjoy the man. But when one is a devotee, the consciousness is different. And we'll hear about this tonight. Prabhupada explains in the purport. A devotee has a different type of consciousness, the way they see the opposite sex. As we discussed last night, it is attachment to the opposite sex which keeps everyone bound within this material world, according to the Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. Earlier, it is mentioned. that is Maitunibha, Pumsastriya, Maitunibha Metam. It creates a knot or a bondage within the consciousness, which binds us to this material world continuously. So lifetime after lifetime, we continue to come back to this material world, basically for this one reason. We want to enjoy separately from Krishna, and how does that enjoyment, how does it manifest in this material world? We want to enjoy with the opposite sex. So that is basically what makes the material world continue. If you see, in the very first purport of the Bhagavatam, 111, Prabhupada says, sex life is the active principle of the material world. Without sex life, the whole thing stops. Because of sex life, the whole thing remains in motion. It is everyone's inspiration in the material world. So it is because of sex life that the whole thing is continuing. So how does the demon see? The demon sees the opposite sex and he wants to enjoy. Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita in one purport that marriage is necessary to restrict the consciousness down to one person, that desire, to regulate the desire. But then Prabhupada says, even in marriage, it is dangerous because then you contemplate others that are not your husband or wife. That is the way the mind works. We all do that. Even though we're married to one person, but the mind is still contemplating others. So that is demoniac consciousness, demoniac spirit. At least on the gross level, we should remain controlled and gradually purify our subtle body as well. Until we come to the purified state where we don't see others according to bodily identification. We see everyone as a servant of Krishna. O wonderfully beautiful girl, you have such nice eyes, resembling the petals of a lotus flower. Who are you? Where do you come from? What is your purpose in coming here? And to whom do you belong? O you whose thighs are extraordinarily beautiful, our minds are becoming agitated simply because of seeing you. Yogesh, you like to read?
The demon inquired from the wonderfully beautiful girl, to whom do you belong? A woman is supposed to belong to her father before her marriage, to her husband after her marriage, and to her grown sons in old age. In regard to this inquiry, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the question, to whom do you belong, means whose daughter are you? Since the demons could understand that the beautiful girl was still unmarried, every one of them desired to marry her. Thus they inquired, whose daughter are you?
So what are the points?
That the lady always needs some protection at every stage.
And the demons are looking for sense gratification. What's everywhere. That? Demons are looking for sense gratification everywhere. In each and every activity, they are thinking sex.
Any other points?
It's not necessary that one should be demonic. If you are in a marriageable age and you look for somebody, you are looking for somebody, and you do find somebody good looking, then you tend to ask that person, not directly, maybe indirectly, who your parents are, so that you can talk to the parents and see whether you fit into the line.
There's a gentleman behavior.
I go back to my marriageable age, when I was looking for a partner. I was looking in my family circle whether anyone whom I might be married or anyone.
Yeah, but the point is, in the civilized society, in the Vedic civilization, the girls in the upper classes, the girls were not allowed to be public. So that's why, you know, it would not be like this, that a girl just walks through like that. It's not seen like that. The princesses in the Kshatriya dynasties, they were never seen by lower people. So, it's not normal that a girl would just walk through like this, unaccompanied. just walk through, especially when there's all demons there, powerful men. Any other points?
According to Matra Paradarishu, the Chanak Pandit says that you think other wife as your mother.
That is coming up. Next couple of purports. Anything else?
Just continuing from this point, even if you have a desire when you are at a marriageable age to marry, you may be faithful to one person, but isn't that also lust? Because of lust you want to marry, otherwise God wouldn't you join Brahmachari Ashram.
Yeah.
And that is lust.
Everything's lust. Everything in the material world is lust. Lust means the desire to be separate from Krishna. So, as long as you want to be separate from Krishna, Prabhupada says you need marriage as much as you need the material body. We don't need a material body, but we want to enjoy separately from Krishna, so he gives us a material body. We don't need marriage, but we want to enjoy separate from Krishna, therefore we need relationship with the opposite sex. So it's all based on lust. It's material consciousness. It's false ego. It's not spiritual consciousness. Marriage has nothing to do with the soul, but it's a way of regulating the consciousness so that you don't get too distracted.
I think they are courteous and they are mannerly otherwise to ask the girl to whom do you belong. I mean, they could have proposed something to her, but they asked whom do you belong.
Yeah, back then it was more cultured.
Yeah, they are more cultured.
Anything else?
I think the senses have to be regulated, and that's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. And the intelligence has to be strengthened with spiritual injunction. And then you find the detachment developing in consciousness. These three have to take this assignment.
The other point.
So just to add on Mataji's point, obviously these people being demoniac, still they basically asking whom do you belong, which means they basically wish to marry, which is what Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti taught. But if you compare that to today's day and age, I think people are more demoniac than that. They don't even want to know who you belong or what you know, whose daughter are you or anything to that effect. It's become so degraded. They don't know anything about marriage, so marriage doesn't, now these days people basically do not prefer to get married, it's basically just live on a mutual understanding and basically live under the same roof.
Yeah. Yeah, culture is being lost, civilization is being lost, everything is being destroyed. It's the nature of this age of Kali, everything becomes lessened. People become unfortunate, lazy, misguided, always disturbed, quarrelsome, like that. Any other point? So in the civilized society, the women are always protected. So Prabhupada will make this point, this is an important Vedic point, that women must always be protected. So in the beginning of the life by the father, in the middle of the life by the husband, and if the husband renounces, then by the sons. So the women must always be protected. That is a civilized society. In a civilized society, there are five innocents which must always be protected. The cows, the brahmanas, the older people, the children, and the women. They must always be protected. And in ISKCON, we must take this point, because the rest of the world is beginning, or parts of the rest of the world are beginning to neglect these five. These five are being neglected greatly around the world. So in ISKCON we have to revive protection of the cows, of the elderly people, of the brahmanas, of the women and the children. I was listening to the radio before, and it's all about child abuse. court cases going on, child abuse, Catholic Church, Salvation Army, everything. Abusing children. Same with women. Women being heavily abused. In India, there's a whole that's being uncovered. You know, they've done a lot of reporting on it. The women are being abused heavily in India. Massively, en masse. Also in Africa and in many places in the world. So women are being abused, children being abused, cows, we already know, are being abused. Elderly people becoming more and more neglected. Prabhupada makes that statement. Then in Papua New Guinea, they roll the old people off the roof of the hut and then they have them for the Sunday feast. So uncivilized.
Papua New Guinea.
They roll the old people off the roof. Have you got any plan to go there on holiday? Don't go there, be careful, huh? Let me know if you're going, we'll have to come and protect you.
Thank you for telling me the
way. Otherwise, I'll have you for lunch. Now, the women, the children, the old people, and the brahmanas. So brahmanas are not protected or even respected. In this day and age, brahmanas means us. We are the brahmanas. If you look at ISKCON, we're the brahmanas. Everyone sitting in this room, we're the brahmanas. We're the ones who have some spiritual knowledge. We can give some guidance to humanity, but we're not respected. The government should be sponsoring us. That's the system. The brahmanas are always maintained. That's the Vedic culture. The government will sponsor. They will maintain. We have to go out and get our own money. And the government will tax us. Up until now, the religions have not been taxed, but now they're trying to find ways to tax the religions as well. Because they see the religions are not bona fide anymore. So they'll give you land, they'll take the land back like they're doing in Moscow to the devotees. So these things are being neglected. So in a Vedic civilization, everyone must be protected. And as Prabhupada is pointing out here, women must always be protected. So if we hear, because sometimes it happens, even amongst the devotee community, the women are not being protected. One of the men may be mistreating their wife or something. We should do something about that. You don't just sit by and pretend that you didn't hear about it because it's too difficult to get involved with. You do something about it. That's a civilized. Just like Prabhupada Vishnu Prabhu. He was here a couple of weeks ago. He was our GBC. He was a sannyasi, but then he left the sannyasa ashram. He's preaching in Thailand now. He's doing preaching. He hasn't left ISKCON. So one time, he had one disciple, and the disciple was beating his wife. So Prabhupada Vishnu Prabhu, he found out. So he got the disciple in the room, and he got the godbrothers, his other disciples, the men, he brought them in the room. And they closed the door. And he said, I am from Ireland. And he said, you know what we do when someone in our village is beating the wife? And then he looked at all the other boys, all his other disciples, and he said, I want you to take care of this. And then he stopped. No more beating. Because he understood that if anything else happened, he would get beaten by his godbrothers. So this is the system. If we hear something, sometimes I hear it. It happens. ISKCON is not completely exempt from these things. Sometimes the husband is beating the wife. So then we have to do something about it. You don't just let these things go by. So this is the system. We should not be sentimental. Any points?
I have heard from my mom the same thing. The five people whom we have mentioned here, whenever we meet them, we give them something which is useful to them, so that as part of our Grahastha ashram, we have to always respect them and protect them in any means. So when you go and meet elder people, you give them some gift or whatever they need. So similarly, sannyasi or brahmana, offer some fruits or something, cows, whatever they have.
So did you bring something from Mahatma Prabhu?
I haven't implemented.
Then don't talk about it.
Don't just say it, you have to do it. It's a system. So, any other points? Okay. What to speak of human beings, even the demigods, demons, siddhas, gandharvas, charanas, and various directors of the universe, the prajapatis, have never touched you before. It is not that we are unable to understand your identity. Chaitam, can you read them?
Even the asuras observe the etiquette that no one should address a married woman with lust. The great analyst, Chanakya Pandit, says, Matarpat para dareshu. One should consider another's wife to be one's mother. The asuras, the demons, took it for granted that the beautiful young woman, Mohini Murthy, who had arrived before them, was certainly not married. Therefore, they assumed that no one in the world, including the demigods, the Gandharvas, the Charanas, and the Siddhas, had ever touched her. The demons knew that the young girl was unmarried, and therefore they dared to address her. They supposed that the young girl, Mohini Murthy, had come there to find a husband among all those present, the Daityas, the demigods, the Gandharvas, and so on.
What are the points?
And we saw also that she was unmarried. The first year before she was unmarried, and today you have so much immorality.
Any other points?
But how did they know that she was not married?
She did not have a bindi.
As we discussed before, even the demons are so cultured, and we are discussing in the last canto also when we were looking at the classification of Sudra, where it's mentioned the Sudra, the qualifications of Sudra were mentioned, they will serve the other three faithfully. So even today, we don't have that standard of Sudra or demons. So we are worse than them actually.
Yeah, low class. Outside the Vedic culture. Because even in the previous age, even when someone was the enemy, they'd still treat them respectfully. So there was a culture there. So now there's no culture. Any other points? Anything else? So Chanakya says three things. One is that you must always see the women as mother, except for the wife. Right? Next one is? Yeah. If you see someone else's property, you should see that as something untouchable. Yeah, stool or yeah, something you do not touch, like that. And then the other one is
land. Land is not.
No, that's the same. Another's property. The other one is that you should always treat another person as you would like to be treated yourself. So Chanakya says this is someone who has knowledge, who is pundit. He sees the woman as mother, and sees the other people's property as untouchable. Hands up if you have never stolen anything. Never? Whole life, okay. Never? You just say that to impress us, or? No? Never? Okay. So two people in the whole room never stole anything. It's very rare. Hands up if you did not steal anything this year.
See, Prabhuji, this
I'm not finished yet. What's that?
Pens.
Yes. Okay.
I write something and I forget where it is.
Okay. You say you forget it, but so we steal things. Even this year, many, most devotees have said they stole something.
We take something. Often we take the print out, so whether it's stealing or whether it's a privilege, so because no one can, like, in front of my boss, I do the printing. He sees, okay, this guy is printing about Krishna. He doesn't say anything. So I don't know whether it's called stealing, yes. So.
It actually said in the, it says in the Shastra that if you steal something and you give it to Krishna, you don't get any reaction, but you don't make any advancement. So there's no reaction because you gave it to Krishna and that belongs to him anyway, but you don't make any spiritual advancement either. It's not a good mentality to get in. Devotees used to, you know, when this temple first opened, they used to go up down Mangala after Mangaladi, up and down the street, take all the roses from the flower, from the neighbors. People didn't like us. It's not very good. You know, you go around. It's like I stay at Krishna Kitar's Prabhu's house. So next door they have a frangipani tree. So in the morning I go out and I get flowers for Giriraj. Go out in their tree and I look and see if they're there. If they're not there, then I take the flowers. If they're there, I just keep walking.
I did this for 1 year and I engaged.
What's that?
Stealing from different houses. Then do mala and put the Krishna. For 1 year I did.
Yeah. We all
one
do
day,
it.
One day, one lady shouted from the window. She was shouting at somebody. I thought she shouted at me. But I stopped doing it.
Yeah, so if you're going to do it, don't get caught. That's the main thing.
Why not asking? Whoever I have asked, they all give flowers.
Can ask it.
That's the best, yeah.
1 year, you know, we asked all Franjipani Karan and everyone gave
Yeah, in Adelaide we used to do that as well, because around the temple the Franjipani trees were everywhere. So we used to go knock on the doors and the same thing everyone would give. So the point is that if someone's property does not belong to you, then don't take it. That's the point. Then you should treat the other person as you want to be treated yourself. So how do you like to be treated?
Nicely,
yeah. We like to be treated nicely. So we should treat other people nicely as well. We don't always do this, but we should try to do it. Yeah, I don't always do this. Sometimes I speak to people very abruptly or, you know, just like that. And then I think later, that wasn't very nice. I don't like it myself, but I do it to others. So we should try to improve on all of these points. And then, as Chanakya says here, see the women as mother. It means between the opposite sex, there should be respectful dealings. The consciousness should be pure. We should not have subtle sense gratification. Only with the wife, then you have a different relationship. You don't see the wife as mother. You see her as wife, which is different. But all the others you should see as mother. And one who does this, then he has knowledge, he is cultured, and he progresses spiritually. But when you neglect these principles, you don't make spiritual progress. So Prabhupada, he often quotes this point from Chanakya. You should treat the women with respect. Any points?
See, Prabhuji, I was saying the stealing is a very broad thing. If you are at home, and if the thing belongs to your son or daughter, and if they are not there, and if you take it in their absence, to use it even, well, that's stealing too. It's a very
broad thing. Very high culture.
You do those things?
Well, sometimes I did, and they were not away. I took their things and used it.
Really?
Yes, so that's stealing too.
And you still come to my class?
She thinks that it is bought by money. children have problems.
No. But see, if you give them the things.
I didn't realize you were so dishonest.
But I am asking your opinion.
My opinion? If I knew all these things, I'd be very selective about who comes to my class. That's what.
See, Prabhupada, you bought the things.
And now you try to justify it all.
So I'm just asking whether this is stealing.
You have to ask Krishna.
You can tell me too.
But not such a big thing, but...
Yeah.
Not such a big deal.
Yeah?
I mean, just in family, we all... No, family means family. We're all living under the same roof, so...
But you have given it to them. So it belongs to them now.
Yeah, but then you can... Like, if they go away and then you use it, then you can buy another one before they get back, or... not such a big... I mean, family is family.
Okay.
Family means, you know, you walk in the house and half your stuff's gone anyway, so... That's family. What are you going to do? Take them to court every time they use your...
But would Krishna class it as stealing?
No, it's not stealing. It's just means family. Family means... Okay. In family, nothing is private, nothing is sacred.
Okay.
Everyone uses each other's stuff, so that's family.
Okay.
You don't mind.
Well, that's good.
Krishna was stealing
What is it?
What do you have to blame Krishna for? Stealing.
God's propensity for stealing from Krishna.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, it feels good when we steal. We like to do it. That's why we do it. We like doing it. It's enjoyable. Not that. But we should not do it. Krishna says, do not do it. But we all do it. We all like to do it. It's part of our nature. We like to take something and no one saw it. It's like my grandmother, she goes on the planes or the boats, you know, and she takes everything. Yeah? The bag is full of soap and
perfumes.
Yeah, everything. Like she comes out and says, like, you know, they got, you know, when they sometimes they put like a bowl of lollies or something, so people can take one lolly. So when no one's looking, she gets the whole bowl, she puts it in her bag. She's terrible. Every time she goes somewhere, she comes back with all these free things. Yeah, she's always. Yeah. If something's for it, she'll just like just take it. So we shouldn't be like that. That's not. Maybe take one or two things, but don't take everything.
Sometimes you take something more than what is necessary.
Is this
Yeah, if you're a grihastha, yeah, it's like we should. It's like sometimes I go to the hotels or I stay somewhere and then they have soaps, you know, like the good soaps, the bona fide ones. So I'm particular about which soap. But if I have the good ones and, you know, there's extra there, I take them. Like that. So it's stealing. But then in another sense, you've paid them to stay there, so. In general, we should not steal, that's the point.
You are earning more than you require.
Yeah, we should not over-accumulate. That's it. Don't become too greedy. I think a few soaps, not a big deal. But... Okay. Oh, beautiful girl with beautiful eyebrows. Certainly Providence, by his causeless mercy, has sent you to please the senses and minds of all of us. Is this not a fact? We are now all engaged in enmity among ourselves because of this one subject matter, the container of nectar. Although we have been born in the same family, we are becoming increasingly inimical. O thin-waisted woman, who are so beautiful in your prestigious position, we therefore request you to favour us by settling our dispute. Lila Mai, you like to read them?
The demons understood that the beautiful woman had attracted the attention of them all. Therefore, they unanimously requested her to become an arbiter to settle the dispute.
So, what are the points?
Choose carefully your arbitrators. Don't mind the background, don't take them up in your arbitrators.
Anything else?
When you are under the influence of lust, then you have got no judgment. You just believe in that beautiful person. Too much. You believe them too much. Mm. You forget the. You can't judge.
Mm. Any other point?
Lust covers your intelligence.
Do you have any Shastric reference for this? Jayato Vishayan Pumsam. Any other points? So women have a very powerful position within society, and they have a great responsibility because they're able to bewilder men. And that's what's happening here. The Lord, in order to bewilder the demons, he takes a female form. The female form bewilders the minds of men. So women have a very great responsibility to learn and to practice chastity. Otherwise they control and they bewilder the minds of the men. And then it can cause great problems in society. And you'll see that's basically the way society is now. There's a lot of problems in society because women are not being trained properly how to deal with the men, and the men are not being trained how to deal with the women. So therefore, in advertisement, whenever they want to advertise something, they use a beautiful woman like that because it bewilders the mind. Just like I remember many years ago, I've said before, I was driving down the road in Adelaide and they had some kitchen tile advertisement. Then on the board they had a beautiful girl in the kitchen just wearing the bathing suit. So that had nothing to do with the kitchen tile, but it made everyone look at the ad and become absorbed. So that is the nature of the form of the woman. It bewilders the mind of the man. So therefore the woman must control her shakti. She must understand how her influence acts upon the mind of the men, and she must learn to control that and not to misuse it. And similarly, because the men want to misuse it, and then the women become also contaminated, they also want to misuse it, and then that's when problems arise in society. So we're hearing from the Bhagavatam that women should control their potency, because they have a potency. And women have to understand this point. The Bhagavatam has taught us that women, in one sense, are more powerful than men. Because even when a man has conquered, he's Digvijay, he's conquered all the directions on the earth, very powerful man, very powerful warrior, king, he can conquer all the men on the earth, but when it comes to the inner chambers of his palace, before his queens, right, just by moving their eyebrows, they conquer him. That's how powerful the woman is. So the women in Vedic society, they are trained how to deal properly with the men, so not to cause problems with the men. So in ISKCON, the women have to learn these things. Act properly with the men so you don't cause problems, and the men have to learn to act properly with the women so that women are protected properly also. Any points?
Otherwise, there's one Shankara, illegitimate children.
Any other point? Okay. All of us, both demons and demigods, have been born of the same father, Kashyapa, and thus we are related as brothers. But now we are exhibiting our personal prowess in dissension. Therefore, we request you to settle our dispute and divide the nectar equally amongst us. Having thus been requested by the demons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had assumed the form of a beautiful woman, began to smile. Looking at them with attractive feminine gestures, she spoke as follows. So this is the most bewildering woman of all, because this is Krishna
in the form of a woman. So who could be more beautiful? Yeah, Radharani is the only equal. Radharani is Krishna's own Haladini Shakti, his own pleasure potency. And Mohini Murti is like that as well.
Krishna
himself in the form of a woman. So totally do it. We'll see as the pastime unveils, as it goes on, that even Shiva becomes bewildered. And Shiva thinks, how come I'm bewildered? I don't get bewildered by any woman in this world. So then he understands the woman must be transcendental. It is not ordinary person. But the point is that we should learn not to become bewildered by the opposite sex. If you want to advance spiritually, you have to learn not to become bewildered by the opposite sex. Any points?
Well, Lord Shiva felt very good that he got bewildered by him.
Yeah, because at least he got bewildered by Krishna. Everyone will get bewildered by Krishna. No one can resist Krishna. Okay, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Mohini told the demons, O sons of Kashyapa Muni, I am only a prostitute. How is it that you have so much faith in me? A learned person never puts his faith in a woman. Rohini, you want to read them?
Chandra Pandit, the great politician and moral instructor, said, Vishvaso naiva kartavya svisu ajakulesha cha. Never put your faith in a woman or a politician. Thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was pretending to be a woman, warned the demons against putting so much faith in her. For she had appeared as an attractive woman, ultimately to cheat them. Indirectly disclosing the purpose for which she had appeared before them, she said to the sons of Kashyapa, how is this? You were all born of a great rishi, yet you are putting your faith in a woman who is loitering here and there like a prostitute, unprotected by a father or husband. Women in general should not be trusted, and what to speak of a woman loitering like a prostitute? The word kamini is significant in this connection. Women, especially beautiful young women, invoke a dormant lusty desire of a man. Therefore, according to Manu Samhita, every woman should be protected, either by her husband, by her father, or by her grown sons. Without such protection, a woman will be exploited. Indeed, women like to be exploited by men. As soon as a woman is exploited by a man, she becomes a common prostitute. This is explained by Mohini Murti, the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So what are the points?
That the women, they, especially if they are young and beautiful, they invoke the lusty desires in men. And so as you said, that the women have got the responsibility to be chaste.
Anything else?
Women are of a nature that they can easily be manipulated and exploited. That is what we see in today's world. All the corporate women are imposed to have this equal right and equal position with men in the corporate world, and eventually they have been exploited in one way or the other. So that is one thing. Women have to be protected, as Prabhupada has mentioned here.
So does it mean a woman should not take the position of a CEO in a company?
She can take, but again, because of her nature, she can be exploited easily.
Should have
any
attitude towards women corporations. They should have female corporations.
They do. There's companies that are run just by women. Businesses are run just by women.
Should a woman become a temple president in ISKCON?
Should she be protected by the father, husband, or son? They can be on that position, but this should still be, it shouldn't be like a woman who is not being protected by any one of them. You will not should be on a position because they can be exploited easily. So there has to be someone who is protecting them, looking after them.
On this point, I will say it is the husband's responsibility also to take care of the wife, because the wife is lusty and too much greedy about money. The husband should control the wife, whether it's a temple president or whatever.
Yeah, so Prabhupada said that the women can become temple presidents in ISKCON. We have two women who are GBC members in ISKCON. Maybe more, I think there's two though at this point in time. So the women can take leading roles in ISKCON, that's not a problem. But Prabhupada said they still should be submissive to the husband.
Yeah.
So that should be the criteria that Prabhupada gave us. So, Chanakya says, never trust a woman or a politician. So this is quite often quoted by devotees. Never trust a woman or a politician. So what does this mean? We can't trust all the women here?
Non-devotees. Non-devotees.
Don't trust. So all the non-devotee women in the world, we can't trust them.
In the sense that they do not keep what the confidential matter.
They can't keep secrets?
There's a pastime in Mahabharat where Yudhishthira Maharaj curses his mother for keeping the secret of Karna as her son or as his elder brother. Therefore, he said that woman will not be able to keep the secret in future.
It's more difficult for them. It's more difficult for them. I don't know if it's impossible, but it's difficult. So does it mean we cannot trust the women? Does it mean we cannot trust any of you? Are you all untrustworthy? So what does it mean? Why is Chanakya saying it? Why does Prabhupada always quote it? Why do devotees always say it? It is Rajaniti. Means Chanakya is speaking about kings and politicians. He's not speaking about all women. He's saying that in the instructions to the king, because this is specifically where this instruction comes from, it's the instructions to the king. The king has to be very careful of women, because in the past, the women would be trained to poison the kings. The opposite king in the other kingdom, he would send a woman to seduce that king as an offering, but then she would poison him and kill him. So then Chanakya says, do not trust the women. He's not talking about all women. Right. Does it mean you can't trust your mother? Or your daughter? Or your sister? No, it's not like that. Right. I trust all the women that are here. I trust many women. I trust my mother with my life. So it's not that we do not trust women. It's not that they're untrustworthy. Chanakya says it's in context. So we have to understand it in context. Women and politicians. So Chanakya is saying to the king, don't trust the other kings. No, because they'll come and they'll try to make some alliance with you or something, but actually they just want your kingdom. So it's a very particular instruction that Chanakya has given. So it doesn't mean we can't trust anyone. It doesn't mean you can't trust your temple president because he's a politician, or the GBC member because they're politicians. It doesn't mean that. It means that we cannot trust someone who is in the material world. You have to be careful of politics in the material world. So Prabhupada, once again, he is saying that women must be protected at all times. So protection means the way we deal with each other. The way the men deal with the women and the women deal with the men. It has to be based on trust. Prabhupada says that ISKCON goes on through love and trust.
So there has to be close. Well, I have close relationships with many of my god sisters, many female devotees, many of the women in ISKCON. I have close relationships with them. Because it's based on affection and trust. So that is not material. So that is what the spiritual institution, or our spiritual institution, will become successful when there is love and trust between the devotees. When it's not based on material consideration, but it's based on spiritual consideration. So, any points?
The most of the women, they are not emotionally stable.
Women are not emotionally stable?
Many
are.
Is that true?
Yeah, they get emotionally involved.
Women get emotional?
You don't know what I mean?
I know.
Okay.
First time I understood this in my life.
Okay.
I didn't know that women were emotional.
Okay, thank you.
O demons, as monkeys, jackals, and dogs are unsteady in their sexual relationships and want newer and newer friends every day, women who live independently seek new friends daily. Friendship with such a woman is never permanent. This is the opinion of learned scholars. So it doesn't mean all women. It doesn't mean all women are just lusty. Probably, if anything, the men are more lusty. But if the women are not protected, they may be taken advantage of by the men. That's why in the Vedic civilization there has to be protection. There has to be systems in place that the men and women do not mix freely or whimsically or unnecessarily. So then it creates problems within society. So there has to be culture in the way we deal. Not that we don't associate with the women, not that we don't associate with the men, but we have to learn how to deal with the opposite sex. So it's cultured, so it's civilized. We don't just deal with them whimsically, that's the point. Sri Shukadev Goswami continued, after the demons heard the words of Mohini Murti, who had spoken as if jokingly, they were all very confident. They laughed with gravity and ultimately they delivered the container of nectar into her hands. Ananda Balabha Prabhu.
The personality of Godhead in his form of Mohini was certainly not joking but talking seriously with gravity. The demon, however, being captivated by Mohini Murti's bodily features, took her words as a joke and confidently delivered the container of nectar into her hands. Thus Mohini Murti resembles Lord Buddha who appeared Sammohaya Suradvisham to cheat the Asuras. The word Suradvisham refers to those who are envious of the demigods or devotees. Sometimes an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cheats the atheists. Thus we see here that although Mohini Murti was speaking factually to the Asuras, the Asuras took her words to be fastidious. Indeed, they are so confident of Mohini Murti's honesty that they immediately delivered the container of nectar into her hands, as if they would allow her to do with the nectar whatever she liked, whether she distributed it, threw it away, or drank it herself without giving it to them.
So, what are the points here? Any other points? So Krishna is attractive by definition. The name Krishna means all attractive, one who compels one. Krishna,
Shri Krishna, Karshani. That bhakti attracts Krishna. Karshani means like controls. So the word Krishna is coming from the same word, Karshana, which means one who forcibly attracts. So Krishna is so powerful, and he is attractive in every way. And he has six opulences, and one of them is beauty. But if someone is beautiful, but they don't have a good personality, we become unattracted to them. Sometimes you see a very beautiful woman or a very handsome man, but then they don't have good character, and then immediately you just feel disgusted by that person. So Krishna, he has such powerful potency that he can attract everyone. He's beautiful, unlimitedly beautiful, but there's far more than that. So he is bewildering the demons through his talk, behavior, intelligence, so many wonderful qualities, so much so that everyone just becomes completely bewildered. So that is the nature of opulence. Aishwaryasya samagrasya viyasa yasya shahasriya jnana vairagyasya shanam bhagatingana. Krishna has all the six opulences, unlimitedly. Samagrasya means like unlimitedly. So as Mohini, when he appears as the woman, so beautiful, just bewilders everyone. Everyone's just completely bewildered. So much so that they've just been fighting over this nectar. It's practically become the most important attachment they have in their lives. And then this person walks in, they just give the nectar to that person. And they only met them for a few minutes. So who this person must be? How powerful and attractive this person was. Not ordinary woman. It's not just beauty. No. It's the intelligence, it's the mood, it's the personality, speech. Qualities, speech. Yeah, so many things. Because the person is saying to them, you're like a monkey. Yeah, you're like a monkey, a jackal. Like that. So someone says this to you. If you just meet them for a few minutes, they say, you're like a monkey. And you still give them everything, then how powerful they must be. This shows Krishna's unlimited power, his unlimited potency. So, any points?
But it is said about the comparison with Lord Buddha. Lord Buddha, I mean, he was the son of a king, and he was quite attractive too. But he renounced everything, and people get so much attracted to them. Then when he said that, I don't even believe in Vedas, people believed him. And because his intention was to stop animal killing. And so he also attracted people with wisdom and everything. So Lord can do anything.
Can they build
anybody? Anything else? The dharma of to help religious people, Krishna is even happy to cheat, which is what he has done previously, even in Mahabharata, where he basically told Yudhishthira to lie and basically help Bhima kill Kala. So he's happy to do that for people who are more religious.
Thereafter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, having taken the possession of the container of nectar, smiled slightly and spoke an attractive word. She said, "My dear demons, if you accept whatever I may do, whether honest or dishonest, then I can take responsibility for dividing the nectar among you." Trying to shake up a little.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot abide by anyone's dictation. Whatever he does is absolute. The demons, of course, were deluded by the illusory potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus Mohini Murthy got them to promise that whatever she would do, they would accept.
So what are the points?
So he actually spoke lies as well. he said that I will take the responsibility of dividing the nectar among you, but actually she didn't give any to the demons, but his Lord.
That was the purpose. Why he came? To kill the demons.
Just like Lord Buddha.
Therefore, don't trust a woman.
Oh, you can trust the woman, but...
Don't trust them, because what if they tell you they'll do the opposite thing?
Well, that was Lord. See, whatever Lord, you taught us, whatever Lord does, you should not follow.
But here, what he is doing, he says, whatever he does is absolute. So therefore, whatever he is doing, whether for demons or others, that it is good for them. There's nothing bad for them.
Yeah, that's the nature of Krishna. Even when he does something, it's auspicious for you. Even when he takes everything from you. And we'll see this in the next section, when Bali Maharaj gets benefited. And Krishna takes everything, but it's for the benefit. Because he's the head of the daityas, or the demons.
But he gives much more than he took. He gave him much more than he took.
TK. The chiefs of the demons were not very expert in deciding things. Upon hearing the secret words of Mohini Murti, they immediately assented. Yes, they answered. What you have said is all right. Thus the demons agreed to accept her decision. So completely bewildered. So next week, next Monday, we'll do we'll do an overview. And then Tuesday we'll continue with the chapter. And then the following Monday, the 12th, we'll do the exam. They told me today we may have to move out of the theatre again. So I don't know where should we go this time. Because I have to start working on the theatre, so apparently we have to get out. So where should we go? Paul's there, but then if... sometimes they gave us that front room. Front room is very small, so I don't know. What should we do?
We should go upstairs.
Prasadam Hall. Mm-hmm. Only problem is Prasadam Hall, it gets cold now.
You can go in temple
room. Temple room's too noisy though. People come in and out. And
what about should they Prabhupada?
We're not allowed to use Prabhupada's rooms. No, they don't. I know. Prasadam Hall. We can use Prasadam Hall, but everyone will have to wear jumpers. Hands over, Prasadam Hall is okay?
Yep.
Okay, you're very austere. Okay, that's good. Okay, so we'll just go next week, Prasadam Hall. Because it looks like they're going to be fixing this for a few weeks.
So where will be the exam?
We'll have to work that out. I'll have to find it. I'm not sure. We'll let you know. The exam will be somewhere. We'll just have to work out where that is. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.